And Paulino, our special guest, website, of course, behindtheparanormal.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back and take really your questions, but I've got some more questions. I want to get into the demons, talk about Abraham Lincoln and his paranormal experiences and a couple others, and then we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Paul. We were wrapping up our discussion about the demons, that possibility, and you know, there are a lot of people that think extraterrestrials might be demonic. Lots of different things. Your thoughts?
Well, demonic is a relative term, as I say. My question is, are they parasitical? Because parasites are the reason that people believe in demons, I think, because they fill the bill. They don't have, the theology is not the same as you're going to, is ours, I don't think, and certainly not, and they're not working for Satan and all this business, but they are after us as food sources, really, you know. So the pattern of folklore and the pattern of what I think is real is quite parallel, as I might say. They're nasty creatures. They're hungry, they're hostile, and they're not our friends, and sometimes they pretend to be, and we buy it.
Abraham Lincoln had a lot of paranormal experiences. As a matter of fact, he even had a dream of his own death, didn't he?
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. I don't know if this is because of or in spite of his wife, Mary Lincoln, but they had a terrible, melancholy kind of life. They buried three of their four sons, and especially the real tough one was Willie Lincoln. 1862, not only was Civil War going on and not going well, but they lost their little boy of 11, Willie Lincoln. Left them completely fried. They were into spiritualism, because that provided some hope with its mediums and seances and all this business. Actually, it's a death trap, in my own opinion, but you know, ringing the dinner bell for parasites. But that being as it may, Lincoln was very fraught with the paranormal, his life was. One of the things that was really strange was what appeared to be, and this is pretty well documented, not like the Washington letter, he apparently had a precognitive dream of his own death, okay? It was, and he told this to a friend. And in the middle of the war, I believe this was 63, he was a night owl. So he went to bed very late one night in the White House, had a dream that he woke up and then he heard crying of a lot of people. He kind of wandered downstairs, and again, this is in the dream, presumably, and he went from room to room, and nobody was around. Finally, he kept going until he got into the East Room, which I'm sure you've been in the White House. The East Room isn't all that big, really. And he saw a soldier standing before a catafalque, you know, a coffin on a dais with draperies on it and all sort of Victorian funeral vestments and all that. And he asked, who is dead in the White House? And one of the soldiers simply answered, the president. He was killed by an assassin. And this kind of sums up for me his paranormal experiences, because again, foreseeing his own death. Now, he's not the only one. Supposedly, McKinley foresaw his own, and Kennedy was obsessed with his own assassination, sure. kind of thing. I mean, at least so I've been told.
Well, he was also told by Gene Dixon, the psychic, that he was going to get assassinated.
That's true. Yeah. And that brings up the whole question of psychics and what they're seeing and how they're seeing it. So the presidents, there were six of them who had UFO experiences, sightings and this kind of thing. So they supposedly are at the center of the cover-ups sometimes when it comes to UFOs and things of this kind. So the paranormal is behind the presidency in a way, too. You know, it's fraught with paranormal implications, the things that that are experienced by presidents, things of this kind.
Let's talk a couple more stories here, Paul, and then we'll take some calls for you as they begin to line up. The paranormal influence on future history as well. Tell me about the Litchfield County, Connecticut flap and what's going on there.
Yeah, that's really bizarre. As I say, the more you look, the more you find, and some people will say, well, that's why you find it, but I don't think that that's the case. I think this really holds together. As I mentioned earlier, this started in 05. A woman read my book, Footsteps in the Attic, and thought, well, this approach was the only thing that explained things like legs hanging from the ceiling of their a living room, and walking as if on a surface that wasn't there in our world, and me standing out there by their stone wall and having a horseman ride by. I could feel the wind, hear the hoofprints, but didn't see anything. Or a video we got, I think you have it somewhere on the Coast to Coast site,
yeah.
The little boy telling me that he's got his invisible friend was in the tree outside and pointing, this is at night, and we're pointing the infrared camera up there, and sure enough, there's this thing coming down out of the tree. And then leading from that into people seeing the UFOs and the Bigfoot sightings, black helicopters, all seeming to center on this abandoned so-called farm. And we sort of have staked the place out. It's still going on, so I don't want to say too much because, I don't know, people could get in trouble. But soldiers in 2009 and 2010 were going around telling people to stay out of certain areas. Mark D'Antonio, whom I'm sure you know, he's MUFON's, he's an astronomer, MUFON's director, National Director of Video and Photo Analysis, said that one of his friends was in a favorite fishing spot down there. Soldiers came along, armed, told them to get the heck out, albeit politely. And this sort of thing. Up at this farm, there's been activity over a number of years, but no, everything but farming. We have aerial photos of this large barn with two silos. And by 2013, in 2012, the place had been, the central building had been cleared out and was all just, dirt, okay? Then by 2013, there was a huge metal sheet that could only be seen from the air, with evidence of excavation around the edges of it. And by last year, there was a new farm building, but again, no farming activity that we've been able to see. And people ask us, how do you cover a case of this scope? Well, we have a spy network, George, essentially. Our show has reporters, and we get to know local people, and we get them out there, and they keep an eye on things for us. And we kind of vet them first, make sure that they're not fruitcakes, and, we have some good people out there. So as far as future history is concerned, what are they doing out there? How are they researching? Ben seems to think, and he has some experiences he doesn't like to talk about, but he seems to think that they're doing research on, among other things, paranormal intersects and how power can be generated from the action of those intersects. Okay. Also, militarization of the paranormal. Talk about influencing future history. What would happen if we were able to tie into another time like shamans do, or a parallel world where we've conquered a certain country, and we can pull that in as shamans do and make that real in our world? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. This is real. And as far as what exactly is going on, we still don't know. But only last week, I was in the military. I had a clearance, not very high, but I had a nodding acquaintance with how things work. And someone I know who is has connections high up in the intelligence community, I asked him to check out this particular farm. And it came back, back off.
Back off? Like stay away?
Yeah. It's like the implication being that it's very important and you're not going to get near it and you could get in trouble. So, future history? I think so.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Maybe so. Let's take a few
calls. Maybe it's all coincidence, but
never coincidences. These things.
I don't believe in coincidence, frankly.
Neither do I. Let's go to John in Knights Landing, California to get things started west of the Rockies. John, go on. You're on with Paulino.
Hello, George. Good to talk to you again.
You too, John.
I just wanted to mention a few things. I've personally had experience seeing a gray alien. Which are you calling them pterocytes?
Well, John, what I'm saying is that nothing in the paranormal is what it appears to be. You can't take it at face value. I don't know. I'm not in your shoes. Gray alien could be just that. You talk to our good friend Stan Friedman.
Wouldn't they be feasting on the planet right now, considering if they're going after humans? We got, 7.6 billion humans?
It's a lot of food.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of food.
You look at the whole abduction phenomenon. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, exactly.
You can get into a very dark aspect of this, John, if you look at human history. You might say, were we messed with in the remote past by these parasites in whatever form they may have taken? Were we bred to be food sources for them? Are we cattle? Are we being farmed? This is a chilling thought.
And I live on a farm, so.
Okay, well, there you go. So you know what I'm talking about. But, you know, there parasites aren't the only creatures out there in the multiverse, you know, so there are plenty of good or neutral beings. Ben and I have met some in the course of our paranormal work. And we have friends as well as enemies. But nevertheless, the whole parasite thing is chilling. If they can do what they do to families and individuals, what are they doing in the halls of government? You know, and that's it's a deep well.
Well, indeed it is. Hey, thanks for your call. Next up, we go to Debbie in Perrysburg, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi, how are you, Paul?
Good.
How are you, George?
Fair, Debbie. Thank you.
I have a question. Belief system is a big thing. A lot of people, you know, turn to the Bible when they have questions. So here's my, I don't have a major belief system, but the book of Deuteronomy talks about divination and sorcery and things that are abominations to God. And it talks about calling upon those who practice, you know, divination, fortune telling, omens, sorcery, and those who call upon the dead. Aren't ghosts the dead? So wouldn't the Bible say that ghosts basically are an abomination to God? Now, I don't know about the alien thing because we don't know what's out there. The Bible doesn't really touch on aliens and things like that. I mean, that I've come across. I've studied theology pretty deeply. What are your thoughts on this? And I'll wait offline.
Okay, well, you know, I hear what you're saying, Debbie, okay? I was in the seminary for many years. You know, I know where you're coming from. I think what the theology that is pretty much embraced by the Western church is that people would die, before Christ came, people would die, and they would go to Sheol. That's a place of waiting, okay? It's often considered the Jewish version of hell. It's because it's a Hebrew word. But it doesn't mean hell. It means a place of waiting. And what are they waiting for? They were supposed to be waiting for the Messiah. Christ came, and the creed, if you're a Christian, you go to church, you hear the Apostles' Creed or the creed, and it says Christ descended into hell. And they never explained that to us. What does that mean? Well, it means he simply died, descended into death and destroyed death. And this is the theology anyway. So I guess so they don't believe in ghosts anymore because Christ has ended all that. Now, in Samuel, the witch of Endor sees a ghost and you know, is able to make some kind of prediction. But you can't do that anymore since Christ. That's the theology anyway. So all ghosts are considered to be demons by many Christians, okay? So, yeah, in that sense, you're probably right. But from the viewpoint that I take, you're not dealing with dead people. You're dealing with people in parallel worlds where they didn't die. In many cases, all right? In many cases, you're dealing with parasites who are equivalent philosophically to demons, I suppose. Although, as I say, I don't believe that theology is accurate when it's applied to them. But they will act very often like your loved one in order to push buttons to get you to put out energy they can eat. I think it's as simple as that. So, in a way, so the answer to your question is yes and no. I don't know if the early writers or, you know, of the Pentateuch or the first five books of the Old Testament understood the ins and outs of quantum physics, but probably that wasn't their point. But I don't know if you're asking the right question is what I'm saying, Debbie. You know, I think that there are deeper aspects to this, which may be yes or no, but I don't think we're dealing with dead people.
Paul, tell us the story.
I don't think there is any death, you know.
It goes on forever, doesn't it?
You can't have death in a world where all possibilities exist simultaneously. There's no past, there's no future. I mean, this is what the physics says, and most physicists accept it. There isn't any death, so there can't be any dead people. There also can't be reincarnation. I mean, we could take all night and go on with this, but I don't know. You have to ask the right questions to get the right answer.
Tell us the story about the coffin-carrying ghost.
Oh, that was a good one, yeah. Well, now we're stepping across the border into Canada, a lot closer to me than it is to you, and we're talking about Lord Dufferin, who was the Governor General of Canada, a very, very prominent figure in the late 18th century, I should say late 19th century. And he was he swore to his dying day that his life was saved by a ghost. All right. Now, he had just finished being Governor General of Canada and was in Ireland and staying at an estate. And he happened to look out the window one night, and this is 1878, and he happened to see a man he described as being with a hideous face carrying a coffin on his back. All right. And this figure looked up at him at his window with a terrible, you know, look on his face, and just went running off into the blue, not running, but, you know, lumbering off into the blue with this coffin. Dufferin thought he'd had a dream, but, you know, never forgot it. 10 years later, he was British ambassador to Paris. Now, he was a very accomplished, he ended up governor general of India. This is an important fellow. If you mess up, you don't end up governor general of India.
No.
Viceroy of India, I should say. And 1878, he's in a hotel. I should say 1888, he's in a hotel in Paris. He was a British ambassador to France. The door opened, and he saw the same man that he saw carrying the coffin running the elevator. So naturally, he went pale. He stepped back, and he refused to get into the elevator.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, which proceeded to have a cable break, plunge to the basement, and everybody was killed. So he says that this ghost, or if that's what it was, saved his life. And he swore to his dying day that that was true. So here's an example of a apparent ghost, or what it was considered a ghost, influencing Canadian and British history.
Do you wrestle with yourself, Paul, in terms of whether these are extraterrestrial beings from other planetary systems, other dimensions, and or just simply ghostly apparitions?
Well, not really, George. I mean, those...
Or all of the above?
I think all of the above. I don't know if those terms really have a lot of meaning anymore. I mean, an entity, a person, whatever, could be from another planet and still be using the multiverse to get back and forth. They could be from other times, there's evidence for all of this. Or, again, it could be all of the above. That's the thing. It's just... I think we have to begin to think in a whole new manner. Our paradigm, our epistemology, how we know what we think we know, is very narrow. And I think that even our language isn't up to actually really talking about this kind of stuff. So again, as I say, it's the first day of school. I think we have to begin to think in whole new ways if we're going to even begin to understand some of this stuff.
Paul Eno's website.
Like our ancestors.
Your website's, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and you will make a donation. Go ahead, tell us that.
Yes, we'll donate $1 for every book sold in our bookshop online at behindtheparanormal.com. And Tim Beckley tells us that anyone who buys the book, The Bell Witch Project, the dollar will be donated over the next 3 days to the same charity, Action Against Hunger, to help the victims of the Nepal earthquake.
Tim's a good guy. He was on my program just a short time ago. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take your final phone calls and questions. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, you're not going to want to miss this one. We will be going live to Mexico to talk about what could be a purported series of slides of extraterrestrials from the Roswell case. Make sure you're part of that program. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to come back in a moment with Paul Eno and your final phone calls. Okay, welcome back with our final segment with Paul Eno, of course, as we talk about the paranormal side. Paul, what other projects are you working on these days?
Well, George, Ben and I just wrote a book, Cosmic Journey Behind the Paranormal, forward by Stanton Friedman, and that should be out in the fall. We're also going to be speaking at a couple of conferences, and we're working on something we can't talk about at this point.
Aha.
Hopefully next time it's pretty big and might interest a lot of people, having to do with paranormal history.
Good for you. Well, yeah, you're always coming up with great projects, so and you don't stop. Where do you get your energy?
No, we don't. Well, we still have our show in the Boston area, our little mom-and-pop station that kind of reaches a bunch of people who are frustrated and stuck in traffic, so we try to be easy on them.
Is that behind the paranormal?
So we're busy.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Linda in Windsor, Canada. Hello, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Gentlemen, tonight. I'm really enjoying this show. And your guest, Paulino, has really hit it on when he said, you know, the first day of school. I've heard so many of your people on there trying to push the spiritual level up, you know, but there seem to be such strong forces in material to suppress it. And, you know, the more we really do need to learn more about the spiritual, and you've hit quite a few subjects. And one of the number one I really enjoyed was the parasites. And in the Bible, it said when Jesus walked and he was walking through the crowd and a woman touched the hem of his garment, and he said, "Who touched me?" Now, he felt energy leave, and that energy was holding. He said, "That's food for my people." So we know that he, you know, there's food for us. I think these parasites are the ones that cannot get it, so they somehow use every technique they can, be it, you know, a dead one that has passed, or a loved one, or some kind of, you know, false face, and hook on to us to get our energy, because they can't receive it. And are you with me here?
I am. How about you, Paul?
I hear you, Linda, yeah. I think of these parasites, and you're right. I mean, and there's good energy as well as bad energy. I like to think much more good than there is bad. But I often think of these parasites as sort of cosmic mosquitoes, you know, and to necessarily put theological reasons on what a mosquito does, sure, there's a theological reason because it's created by God and it's part of the balance of nature. But again, I think we have to keep it in perspective. And but I don't disagree with you either. It all depends how you look at this stuff. But yeah, they're out there and they're feeding, and we're primary food sources. No question about it.
What about the abductions, Paul? Are people being abducted and eaten by these things?
I don't know, George. Like, I've checked the figures now. It's more than 100,000 people every year just in this country disappear
poof,
without a
gone.
Trace.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and sure, some of that might be deliberate, you know, somebody running away from their nasty boyfriend or something. But a lot of those things, there's no reason for them. Abductions recently in national parks, that sort of thing, wilderness areas. We just did a show that attracted tremendous interest on the Dyatlov Pass case, which I know you've done the same thing.
Oh, great story.
Unbelievable interest in that. And, you know, you wonder, I mean, where do people go? I mean, is it more than just eating energy that these things do? Are there certain species that perhaps have more than that? I mean, it's terrifying to even consider, but you have to consider it because it could be the reality against which our history is... Mm-hmm. Is unfolding, you know, in our future too. So I don't know. I mean, you know, as I say, you don't want to get nuts here either, because I think ultimately we do have control. Life is what we make it, even in the face of something like that, I think.
Let's go to Tom in Festus, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
How are you guys doing this morning?
Good, Tom. Thank you.
I'm pretty good, Tom. Thank you.
Paul, I'm again going to put a little theological twist on this. I know in the Nagamani texts, they found the book of Thomas and some other of the disciples, and they mentioned the archons as these parasitic beings, and I'm wondering if that's what you're referring to, and how one might defend or repel such creatures. And I'll take my answer off the air to clear the line.
Okay. Thank you again. Those Gospels are not part of the Bible because in 325 at the Council of Nicaea, when they put the Bible together as we know it today, anything that didn't fit the St. Paul's theology of it was not put in the Bible. It wasn't accepted. And the Gospel of Thomas is one of those things. Also, supposedly, you can't say whether Thomas really wrote it. But that being said, there are many different terms in many different cultures for parasites. Again, demons, archons, whatever you want to call them, they are known throughout the human experience. So theology is the best way we're able to explain it, but I don't really think, I mean, I think it's a start, but I don't really think that's good enough. Look at the times religion is used to do evil things. I mean, we live in a time when that's common. And how many times do parasites maybe use religion against us? And I think that's something you have to consider as well. At the same time, I think that, that many religions, not all, but many, talk about the good aspects of the multiverse, such as the term angels, and then this kind of thing, that they recognize as well that there are good forces out there, certainly God himself, he, she, it, or them, and all these things are considered in our religious texts, because again, that's part of the memory of the vessel of the memory of the human race, and I think that that's there's a lot to be learned from that, that we'd better learn if we're going to survive, and some of that has to do with parasites and how to deal with them, and how to deal with them, as you asked, is simply what Ben and I call the Peter Pan theory. Think happy thoughts. I got rid of the worst poltergeist I ever had to deal with in 1975 by using a joke book. Now, how does that sound? You know, I brought the family back in. I was there with a friend of mine who later became a priest. We yucked it up. Positive, happy. The thing was never seen or heard from again. Now, it had pretty much run out of steam at that point anyway in this case. But nevertheless, I mean, the fact remains. I think that bringing in positive energy, love, standing together, even humor, I always tell my boys, laugh but not at each other, keep it positive. Simple things like that, coming together, nothing can touch you. And I'm not a really touchy-feely guy, but, you know, you come together and you bring in positive energy, and it really displaces the negative energy. It repels these things, and it attracts good things. I can't put a scientific finger on it, but that's how it works. So keep it positive and stay together. That's your best defense against parasites.
I think so, too. The positive is critical. Joe in Plymouth, Connecticut, first-time caller. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you a question. In 1981, I had a dream 7 days in a row, and it looked like I was coming out of my body, going over my house, and in the seventh day, I realized I brought something back. And in that seventh night of waking in the morning, something kept knocking me out of the bed. So I said, oh, well, I can't sleep. The third time, it was getting annoying. I went down the street at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I says, that whole week I kept saying, gee, something tells me I'm going to find something. And I found a lottery ticket for $10,000.
Wow.
The thing that blew my mind the most was something inside of me, ever since that happened, I could feel this like field of energy shooting around me. So I says, now this is getting bizarre, you know? And
yeah.
Because I was directing my mind towards something in that had a capacity inside of me, my thinking changed. I wasn't the same person. The $10,000, I was getting off drugs and alcohol at the time, and I was going into a new, trying to get my life together. So I kept the ticket. I went into New Orleans, Connecticut. I got $7,500 after it. Gave it to my brother, and I told him, I says, look, buddy, we can't live together. You got to get your life together. I got to get my life together. Here's the money. Take. He's a, today he's into forensics. He went to college, and he's a success. The thing about that is after that happened, I keep having these events that keep occurring in my life that have no explanation. Then I looked at the house that this occurred in, and my birth date is written as the address. My social security number is my birthday twice.
Mm-hmm.
My time that I was born is my birthday. My mom passed away on the same, the month and the day of my birthday. Everything correlates with my birthday, and then I have these, like, something protecting me. I was driving along in a storm in the car, and it looked like a TV screen appeared before my face. And I was just like, what the heck is that? And I could see the road miles ahead with a tree and wires hanging in the middle of the road. I slowed down, and it was exactly the way it was with the TV screen. The events just keep escalating over and over and over again. And that's why I wrote all the stuff down. I keep the ticket from New England, Connecticut, and I keep looking at it. You know, I cashed the real one in, but the receipt of it, I keep a copy of it in my wallet to look at it once in a while. This really happened.
Hmm.
Okay, we haven't got time to get into the synchronicities on the quantum hologram. However, I think that I will give you something to think about, and that is that in the multiverse idea, if it's true, there are many versions of us, and the physical laws seem to be different from world to world, and physicists will sometimes tell you that who believe in this. You could be the other versions of you, and this happens. I've seen it happen several times. Might be your guardian angels, to use a religious term. You might be helping yourself coming together, several different versions of yourself, because it's all one big life we're living across the multiverse, I think, and helping you in ways that you need to be helped, and good for you and your brother. I think you may be your own guardian angel.
The synchronicities, Paul, are absolutely riveting, though, aren't they?
And they're everywhere. They're everywhere.
Yeah, they sure are. Let's take one or two more calls. We'll go to Jason in Cleveland, Tennessee. Jason, you're up with us. Go ahead, sir.
How you doing? First-time caller.
Oh, good. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you. I'm a pipe welder, and I travel all over the United States. Last November, before November 22nd, we did an hour shift change to come in an hour early. So this is approximately 6 a.m. in the morning. I'm driving on a road that I want to say, but I kind of don't. But anyway, I'm driving down the interstate. I'm relaxed. My head is back in the truck. And the right-hand upper side of the windshield, I see an upside-down blue light bulb. And I could see the reflection of an undercarriage from this upside-down blue light bulb. It was approximately 300 feet in the air, and it was extremely heavy fog in Ohio. And it's going down the interstate. I'm doing 65 miles an hour. It's doing at least 110. It went all the way down the interstate. It hit the hill, a big, you know, Ohio hill. Probably about 250 feet up. It went in a fog, and I said to myself, well, great, I'm never going to get to see it again. So then it banked left. This thing is moving like a hockey puck the whole time. It banked left, came out of the fog, went back into the fog, and then came back at me, but not intentionally at me. It just came down the left side of the interstate towards me. By the time we met each other, I realized in a split second it was going to stop over the yard, because the yard on the hill to my left was approximately 150 feet up. It stopped over the green grass. I remember the security light in their yard. It stayed there for about 2 seconds. At that time, I already jerked my truck off the side of the interstate. I rolled down my tinted window in my truck, and I'm parallel to it. All right. Then it decided it was in the wrong spot. It immediately did a side shift left, went over the roof of the house, and then turned on all its lights. It flashed red, yellow, orange. The whole time I'm sitting there with my window down, I'm like, whoa. I'm literally yelling out my window, whoa, whoa, whoa. It stayed there for about 7 seconds. And then it went away the way it came in.
How big was it, Jason?
I would say it was no more than 35 feet across. And I could kind of see, you know, behind the lights that it was a disc shape. And let me tell you something. It is exactly like the movies. When people see things in the city and they slam on the brakes and everybody rear ends each other, you just have to see it. I had my cell phone out, but I dropped it in my lap. And by that time, I did not want to take my eyes off of it.
Well, oh, man, a picture there would have been great. Hey, we're out of time. And Paul, thank you so much. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.